You're listening to Culture Exchange, a podcast out of Clark University's International Development, Community, and Environment Department. This podcast was created as a space for students within the IDC department to share their diverse cultural backgrounds and experiences so that we can get a better sense of where we've come from, where we're at, and where we're going. My name is Jackie Daniel, and I'm a first-year student in the International Development and Social Change program, and I will be your host today. In the room with us is Yennefer Hernandez, co-creator of this program and its technical brains. Today is our second program, and we're really, really excited. And we're also really excited because we have a very special guest with us today. the one and only Tai Chung. I'm going to let you introduce yourself.
Thanks, Jackie, for the introduction. Hi, my name is Tai. I'm a first-year ES&P student at IDC, and I'm from Fiji. Well, I'm from Fiji, that's the short story. It's a bit more complicated than that. I was born in New Zealand, but I left, I think, when I was 3 months old, or still very, very small. Grew up in Fiji up until I was 10, then moved to Hawaii because my mother was doing a master's degree at the University of Hawaii. From there, she did a PhD in Canberra, Australia, so we moved there when I was 13. And then I spent a year as an exchange student in Bangkok, Thailand when I was 16. Moved back to Fiji, finished high school, and then went to China for 2 years to start university. Finally got my bachelor's degree from Macquarie University in Sydney, and then went back to China, traveled around, moved back to Sydney, and done a lot of traveling since then. So, yeah.
Are you sure you're from Fiji?
You know, it's funny because I've traveled to so many places in the world and I've never thought that I was from anywhere else except for Fiji. So if anyone ever asked, I'd say I'm from Fiji. But, you know, even in Fiji, people don't think I'm from Fiji because I'm not. I don't look ethnically Fijian. My father's half Fijian, half Chinese, and my mother is a white New Zealander.
Wow.
So even in Fiji, me and my friends, there's sort of like this sort of mixed race bunch of kids, and we're sort of there's an actual box for us to tick on immigration forms, and it's others, and we are the others.
Oh no, you're others.
Yes, I have been others.
So you kind of went right into the where you're from question, which we were talking about before we started recording today, and I think in your case, you have a very long answer, as opposed to a lot of people have a bit more straightforward answer. So it's interesting, and moving around so much as a kid, that must have been a neat experience. I'm sure that's shaped your worldview in many ways.
Yeah, and even from when I was small and growing up in Fiji, we moved around, not long distances, but sort of weird distances inside Fiji. So when I was small, we had a farm that back then was considered to be out in the bush. It was away from town. There was only a dirt road going to it. So I grew up me and my brothers, and I've got four brothers. We're sort of like these jungle boys, and we sort of grew up in the forest outside town. So whenever we're in a town, we'd get teased about being from the bush, you know. And then we moved into town for a couple of years before we moved to Hawaii. And moving to Hawaii was, you know, it was a culture shock for us. So we got there. We got to Honolulu, we expected, you know, beaches, you know, sort of, it to be a bit like Fiji, and Fiji's a lot more, Hawaii's a lot more developed than Fiji. We hated it. We hated it for so long, like, I think for the first month. It really wasn't until we started going to school that we started to get used to being there. But, yeah, that initial shock was kind of like, why did we come here? This is not really the sort of paradise we were expecting. So, yeah, but then, you know, it's funny, like, the first day of school, people say, where are you from? In Fiji. And they were like, oh, don't you guys all wear, like, grass skirts and stuff over there? And I was like, don't you guys do that here? That's what I thought. You know?
Speaking of, you know, of that kind of experience of experiencing another culture, I mean, I think that for a lot of people, cross-cultural experiences can be really formative experiences.
Yeah.
And when we were talking earlier, you were saying that maybe less so.
Well,
for you?
I mean, I think after a while it became, and I guess because we did it a lot when we were young, that it became more sort of, you know, after going, being in Australia for a while, and that was also another strange experience, but it started to feel like I was just going to a different suburb in this sort of really big city. And, you know, while there are different things in different places, a lot of things are still the same. And a lot of, you know, what motivates people and how people act, it's all the same. It's just it may be interpreted in different ways, or there's certain things that you can or can't do that you could do in another place. So after a while, it did just sort of feel like I was waking up in, you know, the same town but in a different suburb. And I guess a lot of the places that I, yeah, did wind up going to, I didn't live away from, I lived with the local people. So when I was an exchange student in Thailand, I lived with a Thai family. And, yeah, it's just, it just becomes very normal very quickly. The hardest thing is going back to somewhere where you expect it to be the same and it's changed while you've been away.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, I think reverse culture shock is definitely, was definitely harder than, you know, the new experiences. Because something's new, it's exciting, you're trying to find out as much as you can about it. You sort of, you're actually doing a lot more than you would back at home because you're out there trying to explore and find out a lot more stuff. And then when you get home, you're kind of like, oh, I could have done this here too, but I've never done it, you know. So, yeah, I mean, and I think that I probably wouldn't have wanted it any other way. Those experiences, having them really young, I guess I was very, very lucky to be able to travel around a lot. And it sort of made me tolerate people a lot more because it's not people, you know, you just understand that people are doing things not because of their culture sometimes, but just because they're people. So, yeah.
So that's why you can talk to anyone?
Well, I don't know. I'm very shy. So
you haven't been in South America.
I've never been to South America or Africa. I remember, though, I didn't go to Europe either until I was in my late 20s. And that was a strange experience because Fiji used to be a British colony. And for some weird reason, I don't know what it is or if it was just because, you know, they became independent in 1971. And, you know, I was young in that sort of, I was a child in that sort of first generation of independence. And there was still this sort of feeling that the Europeans were better and that they had all the ideas and that they were really, really, you know, much more advanced. And we were kind of raised with that sort of thing in the background. And I remember when I first went to Europe, I was going to a meeting in Amsterdam, but I had to drive to Paris for another meeting. And I was driving back through the Belgian countryside, and I thought to myself, you know what? This is just like Fijian villages. There's no difference. It's just in Europe, and, you know, people aren't necessarily, everyone's the same. And that was like, it was kind of like, wow. The one thing that did blow me away, though, was just how old everything was, you know. You
mm-hmm.
walk past a building in London, and it's this 1500 and something. You think, what?
Yeah.
You know, because I guess Fiji has a long history, but it's just not recorded, so you just don't know. Everything started in the late 1880 or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Yeah, those sort of experiences, it kind of makes you sort of think back to what it is that you have learned growing up and, like, what some of these ideas about other people are. And when you get there and you realize they're all just the same, it's kind of, you know, it's good.
So based on that, I want to jump in and say, like, based on that background that you have, that world experience that you have, has that helped you, like, getting used to the environment in IVC, or has, like, it been, like, helpful because you have, like, all these, like, different backgrounds?
Well,
as you know, IVC is, like, full of people from everywhere.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the best things about IDC is it's full of people from everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they're full of people from places I've never been to as well. I mean, you know, I've been to a few places, but I still haven't been everywhere. And meeting people from all sorts of different backgrounds is great. And I think it's fantastic that the program has such diversity because, you know, these are people from all over the world trying to solve problems that are the same in different countries and but have different contexts. And even like, you know, and it's great, you've got American students here, you who are doing, you know, that same sort of work as well. You know, Americans get a pretty bad rap around the world, you know, they're like, oh, these people, you know. And I think it's even eye-opening for other students from other cultures coming here. You know, there are people that care a lot about this sort of stuff, and they want to make the world a better place, and that's why they're here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really good mm-hmm. to see and to be in that environment where you see everyone working together. I mean, yeah, it's... I felt feel like there was any sort of weird problems with fitting into IBC. It just felt like, oh, great, this is going to be awesome. So, yeah.
What's your take then on living in the States? I know you spent time in Hawaii as a kid, but Hawaii is...
Hawaii doesn't count. Ask any Hawaiian.
So, what are your impressions on living here?
In Worcester? Oh my goodness. I mean, there have been a lot of new things to figure out coming to Worcester. I must say though that when I did get here, first of all, I didn't know where it was. You know, my experience in the United States has been quite limited basically to two big cities, San Francisco and New York, and then only like a week or so in each place. And, you know, when you're in those cities, you kind of don't have that idea of the other America that Worcester is, you know, sort of kind of a bit more the real America. And I remember getting off the plane in Boston and actually looking at Boston thinking, well, it's not that big a city, and then driving and driving and driving out to Worcester with this fantastic guy who was like telling me all the stories and where to go, and you know, so the driver was, you know, and I had nowhere to stay when I got here, so I was staying at the Hilton downtown. So I put my bags down and I just said, oh, I'll just walk to the university. And I walked down Main South, and I was like, my goodness, I don't know if I've ever seen this kind of poverty in my life. It's not a bad thing, but it was a shock, because there's that idea in the back of your head that America is, you know, developed and it has all this stuff. And it was actually quite a shock to the system to realize, wait a second, you know, mm-hmm. this is pretty sort of run down. But in a sense as well, it was... Yeah, it's kind of leveling. It kind of puts your head into the right perspective. And, you know, once I got over that initial shock, I mean, the longer I spend in Worcester, the more I like it. And the more I really sort of want it to succeed as a city, or to be a place where we learn to make cities like this succeed. But I guess the biggest shock for me, though, was definitely winter. It shouldn't last that long, and whoever made it last that long has to sort of, you know... and I remember at the start of winter, and it was starting to get cold, and I was like, my goodness, this is so cold. And people saying to me, well, if you think this is cold, this is nothing. And I'm thinking, nah, it can't get colder than this. And then it did. And then, you know, as spring was coming along, and we get up to like 1 degree Celsius, I don't know what that is, 35, 36 Fahrenheit, I'd be like, wow, it's so warm outside, you know. And then now I know why. Like people say, no, you haven't experienced it yet. But and there's certain things they should tell you when you first come to a place and you haven't lived with a winter before. Things like, just some advice, you know, like shoveling snow. Snow is awesome fun, but then suddenly you have to shovel it and a lot of it.
Unless you get a big truck.
Yeah, I have to ask other students, like, what kind of clothes do I need to buy? You know, like, is this going to be enough? And they just look at you like, boy, you have no idea. You know? So, there was a lot. But I think I'm ready for another one now. But, yeah, the first one was fun to begin with, and then it just started to grind a little.
Well, you know, Worcester had the highest and most snowfall anywhere in the U.S. this year, so really
any city over 100,000, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, because you got to get people from Syracuse going, come on, that's not snow. I know one person in particular.
Yeah, we do.
No, but even I'm from New England, and this is more snow than I remember getting.
Yeah, it's been a great welcome, and I'd like to thank the weather gods of New England for showing me the new experience.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's been, I mean, I'm glad the sun's out now and it's getting warmer.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'm going to miss it one day, the New England winter. I'll look back on it fondly.
How long will you miss it for, though?
I don't know.
I guess it's just the winter. I guess it's the graduate school environment itself.
Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't you miss it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the fact, I mean, I've worked for, I don't know, I guess I've been working for 10 years now, like, nonstop. And the actual ability to come back and go back to school has been pretty awesome. You know, it's definitely a privilege to be able to, like, do something, be doing something you love, and I loved what I was doing before. And then being able to come and, like, get more knowledge and more experience to be able to keep doing that or add to it in the future. So, I'm quite happy to be back at school. Yeah.
Loved. Is there one place in particular that really stands out to you, like a place you would like to one day go back to? Or some place that had a big impact maybe on your life. Maybe not necessarily somewhere where you want to go
well,
back to, but
I mean,
a place that really had a lot of impact on you.
Yeah, no, there's been a lot of places, lots of impact. There are definitely places that are more exciting than other places. I mean, China is one of those places that I was 18 when I went there. And so I was young and I was just studying Mandarin and did that for 2 years in Beijing. And this is giving away my age. This is a while ago. It was just as China was opening up. So this is like 93, 94. And I sort of fell in love with the place. It was exciting. It was vibrant. So I went back. I did my undergrad degree. And then I went straight back to China, this time to Shanghai. I lived there for 2 years. And the amount of change and the pace of change in those 10 years was phenomenal. It was just, you know, I'd go away for 3 or 4 months and come back. And where there wasn't a building, there would be a multi-story, maybe 20-story building up. And you'd be like, wow, how did that happen? And then I didn't go back to China for a while. I did a little stint, you know, 3 or 4 years later. Then I went back for the Beijing Olympics in 2008. And Beijing, I mean, it had changed from this little sort of, you know, with not many tall buildings, lots of hutongs, sort of like little courtyard houses. The area I was living in called Wudaoko was sort of like out on the edge of the city, and now it was sort of like the Silicon Valley of China. It had changed so much, but it still had that old sort of Beijing sense to it. And every time I go to China, I sort of think, oh man, I could definitely live back here again. There is only one problem though, and I think I hope the Chinese sort it out, and I'm sure they will, but it's sort of the pollution has just gotten so bad. It's sort of heartbreaking to see because I love the place so much, and if that's the only thing that's sort of really stopping me to jump back in there, sometimes I think, oh, forget it, I don't care, so what? You know, if the smog's so bad, but, you know, you do think about it now as well. But that was definitely one place. There are places that stood out initially in my mind, as in, I will never, ever, ever come back to this place again, ever.
Uh-oh.
You know, the first country that ever did that was the Marshall Islands for me. I got to Majuro, which is a strip of land. It's an atoll. So, you know, at its thinnest point, it's a road and a beach on either side. And I remember thinking to myself, if I was in a sailing canoe hundreds of years ago and I'd come across this bit of land, I would have stopped, picked up some water, caught some fish, and kept going. And I thought to myself when I left, that I would never have to come back here again, like, because it was one meeting and I just knew that I was moving to work in a different region. And I thought to myself, oh, I've done that, don't have to do it. And then I started a new job and I was going back there a lot. And once you start doing that, though, you do fall in love with a place.
Mm-hmm.
And so you find out its quirks and, mm-hmm. you know, what's cool about it and what happens. And you spend more time with the locals and it becomes a really cool place. And it has become a really cool place for me. But it was one of those places, my initial reaction was, what? People live on this? You know, I remember getting back to Fiji and looking at the mountains and the big island and the forest and thinking, yeah, this is the kind of island I like. this is home. I'm so glad to be home.
Oh my God.
Now, I understand in China you had a pretty interesting job at one point.
Yeah, I had an interesting job in China. It was fun. It was definitely different.
Could you maybe share what that job was?
Yeah, okay. in China, I worked for a television station. I worked for MTV. As I had a show called MTV English, and it was this sort of attempt to teach English through the power of pop culture. It was interesting. I guess the most interesting thing about it was they were very cautious about letting MTV into China in the first place. But they let MTV in. We weren't allowed to be broadcast. My show wasn't allowed to be broadcast in Beijing or Shanghai, so in the two main cities, but it was everywhere else. So my job was just like a job. I just went to work every day, lived in the city. But the other interesting thing about it, too, were these ideas of what we could or couldn't play on the show, which foreign videos we couldn't play. We weren't allowed to play any hard rock, right? So we couldn't play Bon Jovi. But we could play John Bon Jovi, the solo artist, because he wasn't hard rock. There was also, we couldn't play any rap music. That wasn't allowed. We were allowed to play Will Smith, though, he was allowed. Because, he was sort of tame rap. He was okay. There was a very interesting rule that we had about playing artists that may be deemed homosexual. So we were not allowed to play any Michael Jackson. However, we were allowed to play George Michael.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, well, you know what? You can make up the rules and we'll do it. And we did. We followed the rules. They were, we followed the rules. We played the playlists that were given. And the playlists were pretty much, at that time, Britney Spears, NSYNC, a lot of sort of pop artists I actually had never known about before. It's a lot of Europop, that sort of thing, and then, sort of different foreign artists like that. It was definitely an experience.
Well, I can tell you right now that we're furiously looking for YouTube or any kind of archival footage we can get.
And I can tell you right now that they don't exist. Yeah.
Well, we're going to keep looking.
You can keep looking. Good luck. If you find anything, then we haven't gone through and killed everything like we said we would.
Oh God, that's great.
What else?
So, what's next?
After this?
Yeah.
What am I going to do?
You're here, and I mean, you were talking about China and all the pollution problems. So I know you're getting your master's in ESMP. I mean, I was just thinking, maybe you can solve some pollution problems.
I don't know if it's going to be me.
But seriously, what are you thinking comes next?
I don't know. I mean, I'm actually hoping to go back after this to the Pacific and continue doing some of the work that I was doing before, which was in water and sanitation problems around the entire Pacific. But, the Pacific has a lot of problems already, and that's even before environmental problems, overfishing, all sorts of environmental issues. But, and that's even before the issues that are going to come up with climate change. The Pacific's already starting to feel the effects of climate change. I don't know if we're seeing so many things like sea level rise just yet, people are saying, but, that's still a long ways away. But the sort of climate variability that we're seeing, we're starting to see increased droughts. And on small atoll countries like Tuvalu or Kiribati or the Marshall Islands, you only need the rain to stop falling from the sky for about 3 weeks and it's a national crisis. The water resources that they have are very, very limited. So we're doing things like trying to figure out how to put in, we were putting in rainwater tanks, we were doing things in Tuvalu like composting toilets so people weren't wasting water, flushing it in the toilet, but also it also had the added benefit because there was seepage into the lagoons from leaking septic systems, and that was killing coral reefs, which was killing reef fish, which meant people couldn't catch food, and also because the soils on these atolls are so poor that we were using the compost for people to grow their own food. So doing that sort of stuff, it was very rewarding work, and working with really good local people on it. And so, going back to do that kind of thing back in the Pacific would be good. But if this, you know, and hopefully it leads to other things too, but yeah, I mean, if I had to, if I had to go back and work in Fiji again for a while, I'd be very happy. It wouldn't be a bad thing, you know. But yeah, and also trying to figure out, you know, what we can do more globally and how we could work with other people in other regions and that sort of stuff too. Is that enough?
Great, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's great. I'm sure that you will continue doing interesting, worldly, cosmopolitan things with your life.
I hope so. I don't plan to move to the suburbs and start growing a beer belly, not yet.
I mean, now you have to go to South America and have some South American experience.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like
I'd love
Colombia.
To go to South America. Hey, look, you know, I know it's the World Cup in Rio next year, so who's up? We could start walking now, and we'd get there, I think, just in time for it. It'd be a good walk.
I'm in.
It'd be interesting.
Oh, me too.
It would be great, wouldn't it? I don't know, like, how do you get around the Amazon jungle, though? It's kind of in the way.
We could find a way.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, maybe we need more than a year. Oh, we'll get there by the Olympics. It's in 2016.
So just to wrap it up, I mean, you talk about what you're going to do in the future and, like, the plans that you have and all that stuff. Just because we're sharing this also with the upcoming class, the 2015 class. What would you tell them? What's your advice to them in terms of IBC in general or ESMP?
Well, I think the thing that I was really impressed with when I came to this university, and especially IDC program, is that it's not as rigid as you'd expect. You know, there's certain universities where you get into a stream and it's quite rigid and you stay within your program. The thing that I really have appreciated about being at this course is the ability to work. You know, I've done IDSC courses and I've done ESMP courses, and the fact that I was able to do both of them, and I think a lot of them have a lot of relevance to each other. So, you know, IDSC students has ESMP courses because a lot of the development issues coming up in the world have to do with the environment and will continue to be about the environment. And the skills that you learn as, you know, learning environmental science and policy from some of the development angles as well and understanding that too is also going to be vital. So, you know, my advice would be to have a really good think about what it is that you want to learn about, and mm-hmm. this course gives you the opportunity to learn very useful skills in the workforce, but also really good, grounded in really good theoretical ideas about development and also about sustainable assessment and all that sort of thing too. So we'd be make the most out of it. I mean, my biggest problem, I think, doing this program has been there's so many good courses to choose from that it's so hard to, you know, you almost feel pressure as into which one you're going to do each semester.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that you can sort of swap it in and out of your program.
Good. Thank you.
Great. Well, yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It was really great to have you here. And we look forward to the next podcast, which we'll be doing shortly. And thank you so much for listening.